The ragged man in chains stands before the one who could be for him both judge and jury. Wearing all that's left of his torn clothing and bleeding from the wounds that have always been attendant to the systems of justice in mighty empires, his captor poses to him a question which goes something like, "Are you or are you not who they say you are?" "Are you," the magistrate says, "a king?" To which the shackled man coolly replies with something like this, "Did you come up with that idea all by yourself, or who exactly have you been talking to?" "What have you done?" asks the judge. Whereupon the man in chains looks him in the eye and in so many words proclaims that this here court before him does not have the power to judge him, and that this empire which holds him in bondage is not his home. "So you're your own ruler then," says the judge. In response, the now condemned man shrugs his shoulders and still unflinching declares to his captor, "Hey, you're the one who said it, not me. If I'm a king, it is for this purpose only. I was born and I live only so that I can testify to the truth." And the captor, Pontius Pilate, the governor of Judea, looks at this man, Joshua, the son of Joseph, from the town of Nazareth, and declares simply, "What is truth?" Before turning to the people with the words, "I find no basis for a charge against him." This little scenario from the Gospel of John is, in my opinion, some of Jesus' very best work. Or if I'm going to be historically accurate about the whole thing, it's probably some of the best work of the gospel tradition we know as John. A tradition whose narrative of Jesus' life and death uniquely focuses on the mysterious secret of Jesus' true nature. Who is this man? That single question occupies the narrative of John in a way none of the other gospels quite captures. Who is this man who walked among the people and yet somehow sits at the right hand of God? Who is this man who went around working miracles but couldn't save himself? And who is this child, this little baby, with his very earthly mother and her erstwhile lover God? And what on earth do you put on the census form when the empty line says parents and the honest answer is supposed to read something like Mary, the daughter of Joachim, and the Almighty God, son of no one and father of all things? For 2,000 years and more, humanity has grappled with, died over, and lived entwined with this single question: who was this man? What is truth? Who is this child? Was he a prophet of flesh and blood who railed against the oppressions of his age? Was he God enrobed in bleeding muscle and broken bones and sent to save us all? Was he a being partly human and partly God, joined together by some mystical fusion, or was he just a minor prophet with some really smart friends who made a church out of the disparate collection of all those who mourned his death? Pontius Pilate's final question is asked again and again, ringing through the ages, what is the truth? And paired with that question is this singular man's bold proclamation that whatever the truth is, he lived and he died so that he might bear witness to it. Truth, it turns out, is somehow both shockingly plain and astoundingly complex. Who was this man? Was he a king? Was he standing over and above the authorities of the empire? Was he a law unto himself? Yes and no, and something in between. The answer was not plain then, and it is not plain now. And Pontius Pilate, not out of cynicism, but out of genuine uncertainty, declared that this guy standing before him, this whoever he was not a threat to anybody. The Jesus that Pontius Pilate knew, at least in this story, was a witty, elusive, slippery kind of sucker, in the very best possible way. He refused to be pinned down and defied all attempts to smush him into a handy categorical box. Categorical boxes have, after all, always been useful tools for determining who is guilty and who is on the side of the angels, and Jesus would have nothing to do with them. The Jesus that Pontius Pilate encountered was smart and saucy and decidedly unwilling to play the game. That, of course, is one Jesus from among the many that can be found in the Christian scriptures, with different authors, different eras, different points of view and perspectives to uphold the images of Jesus contained in just the documentary evidence in scripture are mind-boggling in their multiplicity. And that says nothing of all the Jesuses born from the vast accretion of cultural and historical legend built upon that scriptural tradition. There are, in fact, many Jesuses. Not only in the scriptures themselves, but in the world's vast understandings and experiences of the Christian tradition. The identity of this man is sufficiently complicated that when asking if a person has faith in Jesus, some real consideration of which Jesus we're discussing seems to be in order. An argument could be made that the sheer multiplicity of perspectives and identities renders the true, original, factual man obscured almost completely. Yet even in spite of all those layers of history, of tradition, of story, there is a deep yearning among faithful Christians and thoughtful academics alike to somehow, somewhere, uncover the real Jesus. The historical Jesus, as they say, the man behind the myth. Among some, there is even an unspoken faith that once we do uncover this Jesus, this historical Jesus, this true man, we'll have answered Pontius Pilate's question once and for all. We'll finally know what the truth with a capital T really is. We'll have it nailed down. And we might finally put Jesus in the sort of nice little box that it appears he spent his whole life trying to avoid. Now, don't get me wrong, I love historical Jesus scholarship. I tear apart every issue of biblical archaeological review with the verve most people reserve for the People magazine. But I don't think that we can ever really uncover Jesus, the truth of him with a capital T, with evidence from the sands of Palestine and Israel. I don't think we'll ever get the facts completely straight. And even if we could, I don't think all the tangible facts of this man's existence would allow us to have the Christian tradition figured out and the significance of Christ all tied up with a bow. There are things we know. And there are aspects of his life that we may yet uncover with irrefutable evidence. That chicken bone might have been his. Most scholars agree that this man Jesus did live, that he worked in Galilee, that he preached and fomented something that was at the very least disgruntlement regarding the Roman imperial authorities. But what we find in the layers of the archaeological record, underneath all the piles of history, even that is not the whole story. Even if we could find all the facts, which we can't, it would not be the complete picture or the summation of his significance. Imagine, if you could, what it would be like to reconstruct your identity from the detritus you leave behind. Even if we could read all of your emails and dig through all your laundry baskets, even so, we would discover a great many things, but we would not capture all of what it is to be you, or all of what it was to be you way back when, before the you that you know now was even a dim imagining in your adolescent eye. Identity is a complicated thing. It's more like a spectrum than a finite point. It moves, it changes, it is formed by history. And when I find myself considering the spectrum of my changing identity, asking those grand ontological and existential questions, who am I? Who am I becoming? I often remember an old chestnut of a story that was very popular with the Greeks. It's a story about the ship that the great hero Theseus sailed about on his adventures. Some of you might remember some of the tales of Theseus. Theseus went to Crete and he found the Minotaur and all these marvelous crazy things. Anyway, he was the great hero of Athens and of his age. And the Athenian historian Plutarch wrote that upon Theseus' return to his hometown of Athens, the local people preserved his ship in the harbor. Every time that a plank became rotten, they took it out and they replaced it with a new plank. Until after several hundred years had passed, absolutely nothing remained of the original wood. Now, as you might recall, Athenians liked to debate stuff. And so the Athenian philosophers debated, is this ship standing in the harbor, this pride of all Athens, still Theseus's ship at all? Or is it just another ship that's been built bit by bit by bit in its place? Like Pilate's question, what is truth? This is not an argument that I'm going to solve today. But I think it's fair to say that no matter what, it would be quite impossible to dig underneath and around those pieces of wood and find there the original hardware that floated the great man to Crete. Nobody will ever truly sail that ancient ship again. But neither can anyone deny that the still seaworthy craft in its stately anchorage was important to those people, all by itself, even if it never sailed the coasts of an ancient land. All by itself, and built almost entirely of planks made hundreds of years after the original, that boat was a marker of the people's pride, and it was, in its own way, everything that the great hero had once been. So too with Jesus. There was, very likely, a man. There was a man way back in history. He lived. Over time, people and institutions and grieving mothers and angry men have replaced plank after plank of his honest and simple story with all kinds of new hardware until it is difficult now to see underneath and see anything like the original beneath all of our replacements. Some of that hardware, some of those pieces, those various identities are related to the scriptural tradition, to historical evidence. Some of them are born from the times in which they are created. Some Jesuses exist quite simply because they give some semblance of hope and comfort to those who hold them dear. Some Jesuses exist because we like them, because they tell us something we want to hear about being human. Or they let us imagine what it would be like to be the ideal person. You may recall, as I do, the deep religious significance of that fabulous film, Talladega Nights, The Legend of Ricky Bobby, in which Will Ferrell, playing the race car driver Ricky Bobby, declares while offering a prayer before dinner, "I like the Christmas Jesus best, and I'm saying grace." When you say grace, say it to the grown-up Jesus, the teenage Jesus, the bearded Jesus, whatever you want. And I cannot do that without a country accent. I can't do it. The prayer begins, "Dear tiny Jesus, in your golden fleece diapers, with your tiny little fat balled-up fist pawing at the air." And others at the table chime in to say that they like to picture Jesus as a ninja fighting off evil samurai, or with giant eagle's wings, or singing lead vocals for Lynyrd Skynyrd. You get the idea. And while it's a joke, and it's supposed to be, there is a little bit of truth in that. Jesus is not one thing. Not one identity, not one role, but a set of identities that we must choose to embrace or to reject over and over again. Jesus is a set of roles that we can allow him to play or not play in our lives and in the world. Lynyrd Skynyrd notwithstanding, these stories, these ideals, these myths and identities, both ancient and modern, that have gathered around this man Jesus, are sacred in and of themselves. And they are also profoundly powerful. Some of them, some of these identities we have created for Jesus, are dangerous, and some of them are nothing short of miraculous. My favorite Jesus, hands down, is the Jesus who turned over the tables of the money changers in the temple, the social radical who upended all the norms of his day and who challenged oppressive powers with the simple dignity of an honest and revolutionary word. My second favorite Jesus is the uncertain man who went out to wander in the desert alone, not sure if he could bear the burdens that had been given to him. That same Jesus prays in the garden that the bitter cup might be taken away, for he is not so convinced he's strong enough for everything that lies ahead. And this same uncertain Jesus, my second favorite Jesus, who I love so much, rises up from his knees at last and does absolutely everything that's been asked of him without fail. Those are my two favorite Jesuses. And my third favorite Jesus, well, let's just say I agree with Ricky Bobby. I like the tiny infant Jesus, too. The Christmas Jesus, the birth of new beginnings, the symbol that from unexpected places new light may be born. Which Jesus do you know this holiday season? Who is this child? What identity? What image do you hold in your heart, and what does this Jesus that you encounter bring forth from your life? Who is this child, and how indeed might you encounter him in the days and the weeks to come?